Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
The producers of this podcast recognize the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present, and those emerging.
The following podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature and is not suitable for children.
You know, I think people want too much. Let's take this person who committed some terrible crimes and done really, really bad things and cure them. It's not like that. It's about modifying behaviour. It's not a 5-minute game. We're playing the long game. So we're playing by years sometimes. And over time and over years, I've watched people change. It's incremental, but it happens.
The guest you'll hear from in this episode is in charge of some of the toughest people in Australia. We say tough because when you hear the names of some of these people, you'll realise how intense her job is. Faith Slatcher is currently the Governor of Goulburn Correctional Complex in New South Wales. But you'll probably be more familiar with the part of this prison known as the Goulburn Supermax, which manages high-risk inmates, including Australia's Pablo Escobar, Mustafa Balouche, and Bassam Hamzi, boss of the violent crime gang Brothers for Life. There's also people inside like the never-to-be-released Malcolm George Baker, who murdered 7 people on New South Wales' Central Coast in a spree killing in 1992, and Lindsay Robert Rose, killer of 5 people over a decade, from 1984 to 1994. Faith was just weeks away from starting her big gig at Goulburn when we recorded this interview, and she's got 30 years of experience working mainly in male prisons and in the highest positions. So does a corrections officer, particularly one so high up in the ranks as Faith, have to be as tough as the people she's responsible for? Let's face it. Most of us have the idea of a female prison boss as Vera Bennett from Wentworth and Prisoner. We began by learning about the questions Faith gets from people about her career. Can you imagine what she gets asked at barbecues?
Yeah, it's amazing how many questions I get asked and how many things people think happen in jail that doesn't happen in jail.
Let's just get it out of the way. Do you have sex with all the prisoners?
None. Absolutely none.
Well, that's crazy.
Wow, I couldn't even think. I can't wrap my head around idea of being involved with an inmate. It's just...
I get it.
The thing is, we actually get really upset with staff because...
Of course.
We're professionals.
Of course.
We've got a job that we do and nobody runs around asking the police if they're having relationships or ambulance officers or fire brigade officers. Nobody asks any of them, but for some reason they ask us. But
because
it's
in the news. When it's in the news, it's a bit like shark attacks, isn't it? It's like it might happen once every 3 years or something, but it seems like this female officer with male inmates – it seems like it happens often and then it enters people's imagination to the extent.
Yeah, I actually did 2.5 years in an investigations unit. So I actually looked at serious misconduct and corruption for those 2 years, did some joint work with the ICAC and the police.
So you do know exactly how often it happens.
Yeah, it's not as often as people think and it is a very small minority.
How often is it?
I couldn't put figures on it. It's impossible to put figures because it's like anything. It goes up, it goes down. But I don't think we would ever have been looking at more than, say, one or two at a time. For inappropriate, and inappropriate isn't necessarily a sexual relationship. Sometimes it's just a case of somebody who's getting too close.
So you mean in the whole of Corrections New South Wales, you might have been looking at one or two
at a time.
But inappropriate.
I mean, that was a number of years ago now. That was a few years ago. We're a bigger organisation now and the bigger you get, the more often
there's more people.
Something happens. Yeah. It's like anybody. If you're in jail, you would want the best that you could get out of that. If you can get somebody to bring something in for you, you're going to do everything you can to get people to bring something in for you. So it was very interesting that part of what we looked at was not just what happened, like what these people were doing, but how they got led into that path. How did you get there?
Faith, I'm a romantic. And I reckon if I was in jail, I would probably develop a crush on a hot guard. And I'm not going to lie to you.
Michelle loves to talk about this every time talk to someone in corrections.
Yeah. Normally in my fantasy, though, I'm the guard, in fairness.
Well, I think also you're forming pretty intense relationships, if that's the right word, with a guard and a prisoner, because they're looking after you. And
I just reckon I might.
Well, the thing is, we're seeing the same inmates every single day.
Yeah.
Except if you're in a high traffic area like a remand centre, where there's a lot of churn, a lot of turnover, and a lot of the particularly maximum security jails, you'll have an inmate who's there for years.
Yeah.
And the officers.
And I'm a charmer, Faith.
I'm sure you are.
So I can see how it could happen. Is what I'm saying. And also, you know, we know that inmates, from speaking to women now, who have ended up in relationships with male prisoners, and I'm talking about women outside of jail, right? They talk about this idea that men in prison have got all day long to write lovely letters, to think about nice things to say and, you know.
Well, in the academy, one of the first things they say to us is, remember, you're there for 8 hours a day and they're there for 24 hours a day. So they have 24 hours a day to work out what they can get out of that 8 hours that they're out of their
You've cells. Just got no interest at all in the romance, have you? You're
no.
just like...
I've been in the job too long, sorry.
Oh, interesting. You're like, love, he just wants the cigarettes. There's nothing else.
No, well, they want whatever they can get. Mm-hmm. If they can get sex, they'll want it, obviously. It is what it is. And it's not all of them, but some of them, particularly if they're doing long sentences, they're going to want to get the best that they can get out of their time in custody. We're pretty vigilant and staff are pretty vigilant in watching each other, not suspicious, but just vigilant. Just say, oh, watch out, you're talking to that inmate too much. Why are you talking to that inmate so much?
Because they'd be great manipulators.
Yeah, very good manipulators. Mm. And often it'll be, oh, you know, he's really interesting. He's been telling me, and they go, well, you know, just be careful. Watch yourself. Just guard yourself. And that's, we look after each other and we look out for each other because inmates are people, same as anybody else. And a lot of them are very charming. And some of them, their offences are about how they're able to manipulate, you know, fraudsters, Child sex offenders are very good at grooming. They get people to trust them with their most precious possessions, their children. So they're highly manipulative, very good at what they do and come across very well. So you just, and I suppose that's the thing after, you know, maybe if you talk to someone who'd only been in the job a few years, they might be a little bit more, but I've been in the job a long time.
That's why we've got you here, yeah. Faith, by the way. Now that we've got that question out of the way, I don't know if everyone at the barbecue is as rude as I am to ask that first, but what are the other sort of assumptions or?
The first thing I usually get asked is it like Wentworth? Is it like Prisoner? Is it like, and I'm like, no, it is nothing like that.
I do love Wentworth. I won't lie.
Somebody I work with came and they said they had a massive laugh the previous night. They'd watched Wentworth and they said the deputy went down and photographed the inmate off the truck and the governor processed their paperwork. And I just cracked up laughing, no, because at the time I was a deputy and now a governor. And I'm like, when would I ever get the time to go down to reception and start processing inmates into my jail?
Yeah. I'd like to think it was more like the original Prisoner, you know, and the freaks walking around with leather gloves and.
Yeah, no, we don't have leather gloves, sorry.
Is it unusual to be a woman in a men's prison?
No, there are women. We like to have a ratio of about 30% female officers within a male prison if we can.
Why?
And 30% male, because it's just that nice balance. And it's just everybody brings their own skill set towards it. And we're also a diverse employer, so we like to keep that diversity where possible. 30% is a good ratio because it still allows for enough staff to maintain dignity and do things like strip searches and that type of thing with a person of their own gender or a gender of identification. So.
It seems to me, and this is going to be a really primitive perspective I'm about to share with you, so brace yourself, that when we're locking up men in an environment where they're prohibited from sexual contact with women for long periods of time, and when we know that that's, I think we know, that that's really difficult for them and can lead to sexual assault of each other and all sorts of business. Do we know that for a fact?
Generally, it's consensual. And okay, generally, right. They'll say it's jail sex and doesn't count.
I know. Gay for the stay. I get it.
Yeah, gay for the stay, or gate sex is the other one.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Gate. They're gay past the gate.
Prison cats.
They're a gay gate. Yeah. Generally, it's if we find out that it's not consensual, we take action immediately.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But my question, when we'll definitely come back to that. Don't worry. But my question is, it seems... it seems inappropriate and inflammatory to then introduce women into that environment. As I said, it is a primitive question and I know that.
No, actually, it's like I was one of the, back in 92, I remember my very first posting. They didn't actually want me there because they had their token female. They didn't need another one.
God, one female in there seems worse.
So I went, and that was a minimum security jail, which was actually full of sex offenders. I actually felt that I brought something to that. I think a very, very masculine environment can have its problems as well. And so I think that having that mix of genders, like I said, it brings that balance. It really does bring a balance. And and you don't have that testosterone battle.
Yeah, I get that. I've no doubt you would bring something to that environment as women, but I just feel like wouldn't your presence heighten the... I feel like there'd be a chemical...
Heighten the sexual tension?
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
I don't think it has. I don't see that at all. It's not something... I mean, you often get them say something. I know at this stage of my career, if I get a wolf whistle, I go, mate, you've been in jail too long. And they just laugh and they just, you know, and that's the thing. A lot of the time our communication is very cordial and we do have a bit of a laugh sometimes. I was recently at Bathurst as the governor there and I was standing in the circle and one of the inmates was at the fence and he goes, oh, what are you, miss? I said, I'm the governor. And he goes, you're the governor? And I said, yes. He goes, of the whole of Bathurst jail. And I went, yes, I am. He goes, really? And I went, yes. He goes, but you're female. I went, yeah, I had noticed that.
Yeah. But you're a girl.
Yeah, which I thought, is it 2021? Because it was a few months ago. Is it 2021 or is it? No, yeah, it's 2021, definitely. And I just laughed and he just looked at me and the inmates around him just looked at him and went like, you've lost the plot.
An older guy? Or?
He was an older guy, yeah. He was probably in about his... I say he's an older guy. He was probably similar in age to me.
Yeah,
he's probably in his 40s, 50s. I don't know if he'd been in custody before. I was just quite amused by it. And so were my staff. They were all standing around laughing. But
Bathurst Prison has some pretty notable inclusions. on its roster, on its list. I'm using footy terminology. You know, even though you're a girl, I mean, they don't hesitate to put you in charge of the most serious prisons.
No, I'm actually about to take over Goulburn.
Wow.
On the 28th of February.
That's a supermax, right?
Yes. So it's both. It's all the way from minimum up to the high-risk management correctional centre, which everybody calls the supermax, yes.
We sure do.
So at the moment I'm actually acting as the director for South. So I'm actually doing a couple of months higher duties looking after South Coast, Goulburn, Manus, Cooma and the operations scheduling unit, which is all the casuals across the state. So I'm doing that at the moment.
That's extraordinary. Your career is stellar.
Yeah.
A lot of hard work.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah.
And I've always liked to do something different. I've moved around a lot, so I've been to a lot of centres. Like I've been the governor at Lithgow.
Wow.
Governor at Bathurst. I did director for Metro West and all the women's centres as well. Worked at Long Bay, worked at Silverwater.
You're obviously excellent at your job.
Well, I'd like to think so, but I always think there's room for improvement. I always think there's something to learn every single day.
You must be excellent because it's a very political position that you hold. You've got one of those jobs where literally we were just talking to a lawyer earlier today and we were talking about the politics around law and order. Every election cycle, law and order is an issue. It's a topic and they want to talk about prisons and policing and, you know, the funding around that and prison beds and all of that stuff. And so to hold the jobs that you have had and to keep moving up in that world as anyone, let alone as a woman, is extraordinary.
Well, thank you. I feel like I've worked very hard for it.
Yeah.
And at times I have been frustrated and at times, I've run into barriers and, you know, it's when I joined, it was a very male job, a very male job. And it was very difficult at times and I had to prove myself to be not as good but better. I had to know everything back to front because if you tripped up, they'd pick you up on it. And I think that helped because what it did was it actually made me from the very beginning made sure I knew my procedures, I knew my policies, I knew how things ran because I didn't want to get picked up and I didn't want to get caught. I remember my very first centre, they hardly spoke to me. And I run into some of these guys now that are still in the job. They go, that wasn't true. And I went, yeah, it was. I don't remember it. But they hardly spoke to me because I was the newbie and I was female as well.
And you're quite diminutive as well.
I'm 5'6", yeah.
Yeah, right.
I'm not very tall, no.
No.
It's about your presence and I think it's about the way you present yourself and that level of confidence.
But if you've got a really easy, charming confidence about you as well. There's nothing.
You don't need to be aggressive.
No.
And the thing is, if you bring aggression, you'll get aggression back. Mm. And I'm sort of known for not shouting. I'm known for not, you know, raising my voice or losing my temper. I tend to stay calm. And I found that to be really effective for me.
Yeah.
everybody's got their own way of doing things and everybody's got their own tweak on how they manage. But I've always found that if I go in there and I treat people decently, generally they will treat me decently. And that if I give them a level of respect, they'll give me a level of respect. And I think that that's, you know, it's all we, any of us want. If I walked in here and I treated you terribly, you'd be treating me terribly. And that's exactly what I deserve.
Yeah. And combatively.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
No, I can see that.
Aggression breeds aggression.
Yeah. They say that about teachers, the best teachers. I was a teacher for a little while, are the ones that just keep a really consistent voice level. They don't shout. Amazing. They just keep it really calm and they're the best teachers.
My father was a teacher. And up until he died in September, but up until his death, and he was 90, so he'd retired many years ago, he still had students who contacted him.
Oh, wow. That's so beautiful.
Yeah, so because he was one of those people.
Did you ever have a family yourself?
I've got a daughter.
Oh, yes. That's so great because I was sitting here listening to you thinking, I bet she never had time for a family. I bet she never got a personal life. But you did.
I did, yes. I've got a daughter.
That's so wonderful.
And same story as usually is with correctional officers. Her father's a correctional officer.
That's all right.
Yeah, it didn't last, but
that's fine too.
So, yeah. But, you know, we made a conscious decision to get along and to not let that affect how we raise our daughter, but also how we work because we're professionals.
Oh, and experts in conflict resolution. So yes.
I feel like you'd have to be. Being a prison officer, like you be professional in jobs where you've got to be super professional as a prison officer. But I'm really curious why corrections. Why did you want to do this?
Well, that's interesting you should say that, because I actually did quite a few different things. When I was at school, I wanted to be an archaeologist, believe it or not.
Oh, we all did. Yes. Was it around Raiders of the Lost Ark? Was
no, 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 no. I just had this great fascination for history. And when I look at it back now, my fascination was with people.
Yeah.
Why people do what they do, how they think. So then I went on and I decided I was going to be a teacher, and then I deferred uni and went and did some sales work, and then I went and worked for Veterans Affairs for a while, and then I quit that. And then I went and did a course, and I did waitressing and I cleaned motel rooms, and then I joined uni and I did primary education for a couple of years and went, no, I don't want to do this either, and I quit it. And I'm like, by this stage, I'm like 24 and my parents are tearing their hair out going, what are you going to do? And then I was actually dating a prison officer, and I saw, he goes, oh, look, they're recruiting. Why don't you think about joining the job? I said, you know what, I'll give it a go, and if I don't like it, I'll just quit.
That's yeah. It.
30 years later, I'm still here. It's just I found my niche.
Yeah.
Because I realised that I'm fascinated by people and why people do what they do, and it's that opportunity to make a difference, which sounds very naff, but it's true. It's that opportunity to make a difference and to learn, and it's challenging, and I like a challenge. I'm bored very easily, but you never get bored in this job, I can tell you.
Oh, I bet. No,
so.
Well, you can, when you say make a difference, that feels counter to, unfortunately, what most people in the community think, I think, which is, you know, that you can't reform certain people. And when I think about these big jails, supermaxes and things like that, we think about the worst people, people that we sometimes refer to as monsters and these really infamous crimes. Do you think people can be reformed?
You know, I think people want too much.
Mm.
Let's take this person who committed some terrible crimes and done really, really bad things and cure them. It doesn't, it's not like that. It's about modifying behaviour. And sometimes if you've got somebody who's never getting out of prison, which we do have in New South Wales, we have people, life is life there. Mm-hmm. So what do you want for those people? You want to be able to manage them so that they're living a reasonably productive life behind bars, but they're also not being violent and they're not attacking staff. We manage risk. We mitigate risk where possible. We manage the risk that they have, but we also try and modify behaviour. And, you know, sometimes you have, and I remember I used to work in a program which was the Security Threat Group program, which was like the gang leaders program. I was running that for a while at LIFCO. And one of the things that we used to say was these inmates, in terms of, you know, being a pain to manage, are like a 9 or a 10. We were taking them down to about a 6, you know, which made them a lot easier to manage. But the thing is too, what we find is that as they find their jail gets easier because they start to comply, they actually start to think differently. And that's when over time, nothing happens in 5 minutes and nothing happens if they're absolutely determined it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's not a 5-minute game. We're playing the long game. So we're playing by years sometimes. We try and do as much as we can with the short sentence guys and get in and do lots of programs with them, and because we feel that they're the ones, if we can turn them around at the beginning, that's effective. And we've got, but the ones that have committed really horrific crimes, they've got really poor behaviours and really big issues, they're the ones that you have to spend time on. And over time and over years, I've watched people change. It's incremental, but it happens.
Like, the public could think, I'm not speaking for all of them, but like, well, what's the point? If you've got someone in for life and they've committed horrible things, why even waste your time on working with them? I mean, I can see that it's about, you know, helping them because they're doing their sentence and, you know, you do want them to sort of be productive as possible and not be dangerous.
But it's about safety. Yeah, it's about safety. It's about the safety of the staff and the safety of other inmates.
Yeah.
You don't want someone to think that they have absolutely nothing to lose.
Coming up on Australian True Crime, New South Wales prison boss Faith Fletcher talks about how the hierarchy of prisoners has changed over her years in the job, and the uniqueness of the yard culture at Goulburn.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
We've heard about her entry into the world of working in prisons, and also Michelle's favourite question, whether guards get romantically involved with inmates. Now, Goulburn Correctional Complex boss, Faith Slatcher, tells us about how the hierarchy of prisoners has changed over the years, and the reality versus the assumptions of managing the men in her charge.
A lot of what we do is about assessing the inmates, where we place the inmates in the system. I don't think people realise how much there is, how much work goes on from the moment an inmate hits the jail to the moment they leave on what we put into assessing them, assessing their offending behaviours, assessing where the best place in the system for them would be. We might look at this particular inmate as vulnerable, so we'll house them with other more vulnerable inmates. We might look at them as, well, this guy's, you know, he's pretty tough, he can take it. We'll put him in an area that's a bit more mainstream. So, you know, we assess, we constantly assess. And if we've got somebody that we suddenly see as becoming vulnerable or is at risk, we'll move them. We do what we can to get people through the system and to make changes. And yeah, we're not always successful. And realistically too, when I see someone that makes an absolute success and comes out, and occasionally, you know, you see them there. Recently there was actually one that appeared, I can't remember his name, but I did manage him, and he appeared in the papers and was talking about how he changed his life around. And I think, yeah, you have done that. We're there to guide you. We're there to facilitate that change. But at the end of the day, you can get yourself very frustrated trying to change somebody who's got absolutely no interest in changing.
Oh, for sure. They absolutely have to have the will. Yeah. And we've spoken to offenders who've talked about the number of times they've been through the system and had no will, and then the time when they did have the will.
And that's your moment. That's our moment. When they've got that, well, you can see it, and you can often, you spot it, you see that moment, you think this is it. They suddenly get to a certain age and it's often in their 30s, the long-term ones, and they'll get there and they'll go, I'm wasting my life.
Yes.
And you can see it and you go, yes, let's make a change. We can help you do that.
I think most of us have that moment, to be honest, in our 30s, you know, and a lot of us are lucky enough not to be in prison when we have it.
True.
But it's quite a common moment. Sorry, forgive me, can you remind me where Goulburn Jail is in your career? Is that next?
Next.
That's next. So James Phelps wrote a book. He's a journo and an author who loves his true crime books. Have you read them?
I've read some of them,
Would you go and get his Australia's Most Murderous Prison Behind the Walls of Goulburn Jail and have a flick through it before you go and take the job, do you think, or no? Nah?
I think he's probably talking about the 90s. There are a lot of issues.
No, he's not. He's talking about 2016 was when this book came out, and I remember talking to him, and he had spent the previous 12 months writing it and researching it. And what I wanted to ask you about was the thing that struck me about the book and about the environment, and that he and I talked about a lot, was he said that the cohort of inmates was divided on racial grounds. He said that there were very clear groups within the prison. There was the Aboriginal group, the Lebanese group, the Asian group, the Islander and the Anglo groups. And they were housed separately, and the prison accepted that, and that was just the way that prison functioned.
Goulburn's pretty unique in that respect. Those sorts of segregated yards are unique to Goulburn, and it's something that we've worked on a lot over the years as a department to try and change. And I think that that's certainly the strange thing is you can put them in separate yards there because you sort of have to, but if you take them to another jail and put them together, it's no problem.
Yeah.
Why Goulburn then? What's so different?
It's a culture that's built up within the, and it's, jails are a bit like that. It's something builds up within a jail, and it's really hard to change that because cultural change always takes years.
Well, the interesting thing that came out of the conversation for me was that as an outsider, of course, it sounds to me like racial segregation, which sounds bad and very easy to sort of, you know,
it actually started in the 90s and it was done in the 90s for safety reasons.
Exactly. That it actually had worked out to be a positive within that environment.
Yes.
And had cut down on violence substantially.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's why it was brought in the first place. But we'd like, I think, over time, if we can.
Why? I mean, my question is, why change it if it's not broken? How much of that is kind of pandering to a societal ideas from idiots who don't know anything about the reality of Goulburn Jail?
I think that the issue is that we're limiting, sometimes you're limiting people's options if you're limiting what yard they can be in or what wing they can be in, and that's not good for them. So where possible we want
to. Neither's getting stabbed, in fairness.
Absolutely. And that's something that we're dead set against. And so, no, we wouldn't change anything unless it was safe to do so. But it's certainly something that over the years we've looked at and gone.
Fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. Because like I said, you can take two inmates from there, take them to Lithgow, put them in the same wing in Lithgow. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
What have you seen change over your years in the job? Things that have got worse, things that have you're seeing more of? Like, I'm just really interested in it and the nature of the kind of violent crimes you're seeing. I'm just really interested in your take on that.
When I joined the job, there were nobody in custody with terrorism offences.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And so that came in the early 2000s. So I was actually working at Lithgow when the first of those came into custody.
And that's a big part of Supermax, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So that was a whole new cohort of inmates that we had to learn how to manage. So it was very interesting to be in the very beginning of that and to watch it all the way through, and we've become a lot better at it. It's like anything. Also, when I came in, it was a lot more old school. But now there's a lot more drugs, and there was a whole different way of, I suppose, a different hierarchy.
So when you came in, yeah, you still would have been the armed robbers and those guys, wouldn't it? Bank robbers and that.
Yes, it was still very much they were the top of the heap. You had a different sort of hierarchy back then, and there's also a lot of a rise of a lot more gang related. The OMCGs, you know, outlaw motorcycle gangs, the organised crime networks.
So that continues in jail.
Well, that's grown. It's grown a lot. And that was the thing too. When I came in, if there was a gang dispute outside of jail, it never came in to jail. Now they come into jail. So now it follows. That was a change. And that was a change that happened. But we have changed in how we operate and how we work. We're very, very different in our training and in what we do and how we operate. I think we've improved dramatically in how we function and in how we train our staff. It's just we're a lot more professional.
I know someone who works in Corrections Victoria in I'm so not a corporate person, I can't remember what it's called, HR.
People and culture.
Yeah, people and culture. And so in hiring guards, and she tells me about the way that, like, the sessions they have, and I'm like, God, it sounds like you're hiring people for a call centre. It's like role play, and it's very much not what I thought. You know,
yeah, well, when I joined, you didn't speak to inmates and they didn't really speak to you.
Yeah.
But we've moved on from there. Case management came in the early 90s, about 94, 95, and we went, oh, we have to speak to inmates now, which was, but I think that was great actually, because we moved a lot more towards dynamic security. So dynamic security is where you know your offender, you know a lot about them, and therefore you're better able to judge and predict their behaviours. And I think that's really critical. Some people have used that as an excuse to say, well, that's why I got too close, because we have to have these chats with them. Oh. And it's professional boundaries, which and it's difficult because people have issues with that regardless of the profession. Psychologists, social workers, lots and lots of people have issues. Teachers with professional boundaries. So it's not unique to us, but it is.
It's just salacious really, isn't it? But just they love it.
Oh, they do. And the thing is too, I get very frustrated too when they go women and male prisoners, because it's not always just women.
No.
Okay.
Totally.
Yeah. It can be both genders that can get too close. And it's not always a heterosexual relationship either. I mean, it's people seem, you know, it's, we're society. We're just the same as society. I just get very frustrated when I hear a radio jock go, you know, female officers, female, 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 and I feel like going, we've fought so hard, we've done so much to be seen as professionals in what we do, that I get really frustrated by you just bagging us out because of what one person did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just so impressed you're going to be the boss of Goulburn. Like, that's so good. It's so inspiring. It's like a hard-ass job. It's so cool.
Career trajectory is incredibly impressive, particularly given that you haven't, that this isn't the only career that you've had. So how, do you mind my asking?
I was 24 when I joined, so God. I'm 54 this year.
You've really gone
very knuckled down.
Really passionate.
Yeah. And I think moving around has helped, being willing to do different things. So I've, like I said, I did investigations for a couple of years. I did a short-term secondment in the State Emergency Unit, which is now Security Operations Group, and they do the response across the state. I've also done a short stint in head office, statewide operations.
And so obviously you run a tight ship. Mm. There's no, there mustn't be any dramas wherever you go. They must go, geez, that Faith, I don't know. Wherever she goes, it's just plain sailing.
I think it's a case of it's a combination of I care about my staff, I care about everybody that I manage, but I also, the rules are the rules and they're there for a reason. And
no bullshit.
Yeah, no, I don't, nope. Don't come up and spin me a tail because I'm not going to buy it.
No, Brett, no, just tweaking the rules a little bit here and there, you know.
I think it depends. If I get somebody who comes in and they've had something really terrible happen, and sometimes officers have had really terrible things happen, I will look at the rules and I will know exactly how far I can push to give them what I can give them to look after them and to make sure that, you know, like I've had a staff member come in and something really horrific happened in his family, and so he suddenly had custody of children. And so we sat down and at the end of it he walked out and I'd given him 6 months part-time, and that was all allowable. It's all there if you know what to look for. So
that's good management. But that's
very different to Faith, I'm so sorry, I accidentally fell over and got a mobile phone up my bought it in and
I had an inmate who I heard a charge, because now mobile phone charges go outside, but back in the day, I'm feeling old now, but back then you used to hear it as an executive officer. You used to hear the mobile phone charges on inmates if they were caught. And I never forget this one particular inmate had a mobile phone. It's what you're saying up his butt. But and he had it in the cheeks of his buttocks, and they filmed the strip search, and now I heard the charge, and he goes, I'm pleading not guilty, and I went, do not make me watch the footage.
Yeah, come on, man. I said,
and he just stood there and he's like going, oh. And then of course somebody had to comment, I don't know if I should say this, but somebody had to comment, he goes, I think, boss, you should let him off because he only used it once. And I looked at him and the inmate looked at him. And I said, what do you mean he only used it once? He goes, yeah, he rang his mate, said, I got it on vibrate, ring me all night.
Oh, no.
And I said, I'm trying to do a job here, mate.
That's the other one that's fascinating. A guy told me once, I was like, can you really get a mobile phone up your butt? And he goes, yeah. And I said, he goes, you'd be amazed how much you can fit. And I said, really? And he goes, yeah, anything you can fit in your purse, like I could fit up my bum. And I was like, really?
Yeah, it is a place that's used for secretion of items.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah,
it's a place that is used for secretion of items. Yes, it is.
Oh, my God.
Have you had a life-threatening incident? I've spoken to guards who have been in that situation where it's been they've been a life-threatening situation.
I've been assaulted, yes. Yeah. Actually, even as a governor, I got punched in the face at Lithgow. But I was just not far enough away from the bars. I thought I was, but he actually put his whole shoulder through and got me. So I felt a bit silly, actually. But I went, oh. But
that's
I did,
terrible. That's terrible. Because that's blaming yourself for somebody.
No, well, I knew he was dangerous. And so I thought, yeah, I was looking at the length of his arms and he was standing behind bars. And I thought, oh, I'm far enough away. But he actually threw himself and he put his whole shoulder through. So he got the distance on me. And as I saw it, I went, that's going to hit me. Oh, and I managed to, ride it. So it wasn't too damaged. If it hit me full on, it would have done some real damage.
Jeez.
But and actually it's funny because the person next to me said, do you know what you said to me immediately afterwards? Because we just shut the outer door of the cell. And I went, no, I don't remember. And she said, you turned around to me and you went, what a charming individual.
God, you're unflappable.
But yeah, no, I've dealt with mass disturbances as the manager. And at the time when you're doing it, you're doing your job. Yeah. And you're relying on you thinking, I need to do this, I need to do that. And particularly when you're a manager, because you need to make sure that everyone's safe. So you need to say, I need to get this squad up here. I need to get these guys kitted up and over here. And you just, that's what you're doing. You're thinking tactically in the moment. Afterwards, you just sort of, when it's all done and dusted, you learn to just walk away from it. You just learn to not stress over it. But I've walked out of a situation and gone, yeah, that could have gone bad. That could have gone really bad. I'm probably a bit lucky here. So,
yeah. And as a manager, yeah, you just want to get all your people out alive.
Yeah.
God. So much responsibility. Bodily fluids thrown on you?
I've been spat on.
Blah.
Yeah, I've been into cells where inmates have bronzed up.
Blah.
Which I don't know if you're aware of what that means.
We've heard that a number of times.
Covered themselves in their own poo.
Yeah, and the whole cell. They can paint the whole cell in it.
I mean, it's so self-defeating. It's your bedroom, mate.
Yeah, well, we have to take them out and then we have to get it properly forensically cleaned.
I feel like it would blood, never lose
lots,
the smell.
Lots of blood. Inmates who love to spread blood everywhere. Inmates who have opened up their own abdomens and pulled their own intestines out.
I remember when Vaughan told us about this bloke at Pentridge who was a famous
self-mutilator
and, in fact, he did kill himself in the end doing it. But, yeah, he would do that. He would cut himself and then put his own feces in it to get the infection.
Yeah. Yeah. Going. And for some reason they don't seem to get infected, which is...
That's what happened with this bloke.
They don't. Yeah, so, but yeah, well, I've, yeah, because I have worked at the Bay with the acute crisis management unit for the really bad self-mutilators, so.
It's tragic, isn't it?
It is, actually. Particularly when you walk in there and you're looking at someone who goes, oh, miss, I remember you from 20 years ago. And you think, oh, yeah, it's a long time.
God.
And you're still doing the same behaviours, so.
What happened to you? Who broke you? You know,
well,
you
do know that particular inmate's history was in children's homes, and yeah, and he actually was a witness in the Royal Commission into child sexual offending. So, you know, like I knew what broke him. So I did feel a certain amount of, I felt compassion in that respect, but I still had to manage his behaviours.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Because you've got to feel compassion for everyone who's got to deal with him.
Yeah, but I think there's a, there's a line between compassion and stepping over it becoming too close.
You're not taking him home.
No, not at all.
No, I get it.
No, not taking him anywhere near the gate, actually, never mind.
Oh,
yeah.
God. I mean, and that's the thing. You care for these people for the rest of us, you know?
We do. We manage people that don't want to see, and people think that's the solution to the problem. We lock them up. Well, what happens then?
Mm.
What happens after we lock them up? What happens, how do we manage them once they are locked up? And that's, I think, out of sight and out of mind. Everybody talks about what all the other emergency services and everybody else does, but they only really hear about us when something goes wrong, which is really sad because there's a lot of people and nobody hears about the day after day after day that everybody goes into, you know, these jails across the state and deals with thousands of inmates and nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to our guest, Faith Slatcher, and Corrective Services New South Wales. If you've been blown away like we have with Faith's career and are thinking about a career in corrections, you can go to the website correctiveservices.dcj.newsouthwales.gov.au or the Corrections Department in your state. Details will be in the show notes of this episode. You might want to go back and listen to some of our previous episodes about life in prisons. We've popped some of these in the show notes for this episode, and we've reissued our episode with author James Phelps talking about the fearsome, violent history of Goulburn Jail. If you have been affected by anything discussed in this episode, you can contact Lifeline on 13 11 14. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
This has been another Smart Fella production in conjunction with the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.